What I'd like to do first is to let you who have not been here since last Sunday, let you do share a little bit in a couple of the things that we have done so that we move on to this. This is not in a series, but it is in a context of a village that started to celebrate Thanksgiving last Sunday, and I just want to give you a chance to kind of move into that. Last Sunday morning, Clark Terry had a good Bible study on the difference between Thanksgiving as a day and Thanksgiving as a lifestyle. I'm sure all of you at some point have either thought about that or have been in a discussion that talks about the difference between keeping one day and letting that one day be a symbol for a way of life. In other words, it isn't that only one day is holy, Sunday or Sabbath. It's to remind us that all time is holy or sacred. And it isn't that only certain eating and drinking is holy food. We set aside the common for an uncommon task in a thing called the Eucharist to remind us of the sacredness of all eating and drinking. I'm not sure that's new to you, but we did have a discussion about thanksgiving instead of thanksgiving, those kinds of phrases. At the community meeting Monday night, I recounted that once in the 60s when we sat as a group of Christians in the middle of Washington, D.C., in all of those issues of war and Martin Luther King and civil rights movement and activist years, and wondered, ultimately, is there any difference between what we do and what our humanist or agnostic or atheist friends are doing? And we decided maybe the major difference was once a week we gathered and had a Eucharist and said thanks. Not sure moral, immoral, good motivations, bad motivations, doing it purely and doing it impurely. Certainly not effective and not effective. I'm not sure the Christians I knew were the most effective in those days. I think we were lacking realism and courage and some other things. But maybe a difference, and an important difference, is we pause regularly to say thanks. I went from that to an assumption. It's an overgeneralization, but once in a while, in order to make a point, I think you have a phrase. I said, maybe what Holden Village is all about is so that people who come here might learn to say thanks, and that maybe the key thing every day is the prayer before the meal, and maybe that should not be at all nonchalant, and somebody choose number 9 without even looking at it off of honey-soaked yellow sheets on the middle of the table. Maybe that ought to be, I don't mean heavier or without a kind of lightness, but maybe that pausing before we receive to acknowledge with gratitude and thanksgiving, maybe that really is the distinctive mark of what it means to be faithful people or Christian people. Some of the matins and the vespers and the hymns we've been singing are ways in which the church throughout the ages has said thanks. Another reminder, today's celebration is the most historic, faithful, universal way in which the church has said their thanks. The meal, the Eucharistic meal, and Bill has already said that, the word means Thanksgiving meal. That meal has been a way in which the church throughout the ages has paused to say thank you. And I remember Dan Erlander's Bible study of the early Gospels and the early history of the Christian church. If you look at those early Gospels in the context, and this is what modern or the most recent scholarship is saying, those letters or narratives were probably to help a group of people for whom the center of the universe had just collapsed, Jerusalem had just fallen. How do you live when the center is gone? If you approach those Gospel narratives assuming that people are writing about faith in Jesus Christ and what that means when the center of your world has gone, and Dan's premise from Perrin and others was, there is a new center to the universe, and it's the breaking of bread and the sharing of a cup. Instead of a geographic center, a temple and a city, there is now the center of our world is a time when we give thanks. I think unless we sense something of that today, we'll miss the uniqueness of what it means as Christian people, as faithful people, to break that bread and share that cup again this afternoon as part of our meal. All right. I'm not saying that's as good as being here the last 4 days, because we did some other things I enjoyed, but at least gives you a touch a little bit with where we're coming from today. For the Bible study, I wanted to do a couple things today. I want to have the theme of Thanksgiving. I want to expand what we just said has been the context of our community celebration of Thanksgiving. And I also wanted to take a section of Scripture. We do this far too little. I knew I did far too little of it before I came to Holden. I hoped there would be more of it here. Some way or another, we still study little snatches and pieces and brief texts instead of letters. So I want us to take Paul's letter to the Philippians, all of it. It takes you about 8 minutes to read it. I don't want to proof passage it. I want to let you have one letter of Paul to a group of people become a message to you today as though you received a letter. The uniqueness in reading it today, and I think sometimes letters or sections of Scripture come alive when we're looking for a particular thing. I'd like you to read the letter keeping in mind Thanksgiving. I'd like you to read the letter keeping in mind, and the words will just pop out at you, how much of Philippians has to do with thanks, thankful, thanksgiving, joy, rejoice, hope, riches, grace, peace, praise, remembering, gladness, contentedness, offerings. All of those are words from the letter. Just let Paul witness to you about Thanksgiving and its place in the Christian life as he writes a letter to, I think, what must have been his favorite congregation. If you had a congregation and the only scolding was Euodia and Syntyche should agree in the Lord, if that was their major problem, one little squabble, it's a pretty good parish. I've never had one that good. I know that. Holden is not that easy to write back to, I'll tell you that. So Paul had great feelings of joy. But in the midst of that, it wasn't only because they were good folks and there were not too many troubles. He's writing from, get a sense when you read it, he is not without troubles. Let him talk to you about what his life is just like. But please take the time to read Philippians, keeping in mind that much of an introduction, and then we'll begin to share. We're allowing 10 minutes, assuming a few are slow readers, and that means three of you can read it twice. There are some 5 minute Philippian readers here in the group. Some sense of the letter that you got from reading it. Written from? Anybody? Pardon? From Rome? From prison? Okay. Occasion of the letter? What's the major kind of personal message besides the encouragement and other things? Reason for writing it? Epaphroditus came to Paul with gifts from this congregation for Paul. Was it the only time this congregation had remembered Paul and had sent a money gift to sustain his ministry? No, there's references that they had been very faithful in that. Epaphroditus got to Rome, and what happened? He came ill, seriously ill, even unto death. Philippians had heard Epaphroditus was ill, so I think the major of the writing it was to assure them that he was getting better. I mean, there were lots of other things, and in the providence of God, I'm glad we have the letter, but there was a specific historic occasion for the writing of the letter. What do you know about the congregation besides Syntyche and Euodia? What's going on in Philippi at this time? Okay, what do you know what that is? Do you know what's going to happen or maybe already happening there?
Judaizers.
What does that mean? When Paul came with the gospel to the Gentiles, often there followed a group that said that's not really the way you do it. You have to become a Jew first. And then you come into the covenant. Probably the major theological battle of what the gospel really is and means is this whole business. And when we start Stendhal Monday night, Stendhal's premise will be that you do not understand Paul's letter to the Romans unless you understand that the Jew and Gentile are together in the church, and that justification has more to do with that than it does with am I as a guilty person standing before a righteous judge declared guilty or innocent? We bring that to it with our understanding of justification. Stendhal's going to maintain, unless you understand this Jew, Gentile in the same church, you do not understand the early writings of the church. So this was, the Judaizers were coming, the mutilators of the flesh. Paul is talking literally about circumcision, but also he uses that in a broader sense. What is the last farewell open up as a possibility for you? Reference to who else greets you. What is, did your imagination kind of spark with what that might mean? Verse 22. 4:22. Yeah, wait, what does that mean? Especially those of Caesar's household. All right? Anyway, Paul had, one of the theories is that Paul had a kind of house arrest instead of being in prison, and they probably sent a guard, maybe chained to him. And Paul was a persuasive person. If you were chained to Paul for 8 hours, whether you survived that or not, he might have gotten to a fairly high percentage of them. Anyway, Caesar's household now had some Christians in it. So some of that has to be speculation, but it also, I think, is fairly clear as you read a letter and start putting some things together. Okay, I
wish sometimes we didn't have such a hesitation to think that the Bible needs all kinds of commentaries before you can understand it. And one of the ways you understand it is to read a large enough section of it. A letter, certainly, you ought to read the whole letter. C. Campbell Morgan said you ought to read it 150 times before you start your first outline of it. That's a little heavy, but somewhere beyond what we do in beginning to make all kinds of applications after the first 5 minutes, and D. Campbell Morgan, probably somewhere in between there, lies the truth. But anyway, it's a beautiful letter. Now let's look at it specifically to get some sense of thanksgiving.
I looked up in the dictionary, thanksgiving, thankful, and thanks, and it's one of those words where there is no other word. All they do is keep using thanks. Thanksgiving is to give thanks, that's all it says. Thankfulness is to be full of thanks. So somehow you have to get some content to the word by beginning to have images or other things that are part of it. An easy definition is not possible. It's too basic. You can describe other things with the word thanks, but they had a hard time finding ways in which you described this. It's almost as though the dictionary assumed that was self-evident. Okay. So I think maybe this letter helps it. Can you begin on the basis? Let's just keep coming back to Philippians. That's a limited focus, but I think it's broad enough for us for 30 minutes. Keep coming back to Philippians with some kind of new understanding of thankfulness, thanksgiving, or thanksgiving as a way of life, or what have you. Can somebody start that, and we'll just see how it goes. Refer to a section and begin to build.
For having gratitude that no matter what is happening to him, whether he's in the bonds or it's causing people to be seeking Christ,
okay,
in various ways that they're doing it, that he has joy because no matter why they're doing this, it's still preaching the gospel.
Okay.
And so this is a way that he has joy and is giving thanks to God for this happening.
Okay. All right. Let's just expand upon that a little bit. Paul is in prison, and yet he can give thanks, and he has a certain view of what his imprisonment has meant. Could there be other views of that for other people who went to prison? Could there be other moods that result from imprisonment? Just build on what Greg has said. What did thankfulness do in regard to his present experience? All right. Thanksgiving, one of the things it is a perspective on my present reality. It becomes a way in which I see what's going on. If we can tie it, let's get other places in the Philippians that may do the same thing.
Well, I want to
bring
that what is happening to me. I really seriously advance the gospel. so that it has become known throughout the whole Victorian diocese.
Okay, all right. You've got other sections where that can be a kind of consistent theme that in the light of winter program this week, let me say where we were saying a very similar thing. We don't see things the way they are. We see things the way we are. Flip Wilson's Geraldine, what you seize is what you get. Right. That Paul could have had a number of perspectives on his present imprisonment. What he sees is that it has expanded the preaching of the gospel, that it has really worked out to be of benefit, so he could see through the personal pain and see another dimension of it. In the language of this week, contemplation was not seeing some different world, but seeing this one differently. Thanksgiving can have that same kind of possibility of helping us see a present situation. See if there are in the other chapters any other things that we can build on that. From last Sunday, that was probably the longest discussion we had, was the important difference of Thanksgiving making us more self-centered. It's possible that it does that. I mean, it really centers on me, the things that have come to me, or Thanksgiving as centered outside of myself, and in language of faith, or in biblical language, centered in Christ, or in what God has done, that is a very freeing thing. The other thing can really turn us in upon our myself, and both can be called thanksgiving, I think. But Paul's is certainly in the context of not being dependent upon present circumstances. Mary and I have a family joke about people who are always talking about the temperature in the room and wanting to change the thermostat. But we had one member of the community of Christ who said anybody who's preoccupied with their own, that the temperature in the room and how it's affecting them is self-centered. You know, after that, it was very hard to comment about either the heat or the cold in the room, because Sanford was always going to look and think, oh, another self-centered person. So it made it very difficult to live in that community. But if you can expand that kind of community of Christ joke into the life-death reality of Paul's not even centering himself on himself in the midst of this imprisonment or a point of suffering, that's really a tremendous quality. You probably all can think of people who are self-centered and also some people who seem never to center on themselves, no matter how much they have a kind of right to because of present circumstances. Yeah.
Do you think that's necessarily long enough to get things to change if you have person?
No. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you're right. Let's take that as the first thing he does. First of all, doesn't he remember? I thank my God in all my remembrance of you. Doesn't thanks before we get into other-centered, altruistic, great, mature. Let's say that one thing that thanksgiving is gratitude. And I looked that one. That one the dictionary has a definition of, because it isn't basic. It's thankful appreciation for favors received. Isn't that okay? Sure, absolutely. One of the reasons to have a day, one of the reasons to have table prayers before we eat, one of the reasons to celebrate the Eucharist is to remember. And that's really the first thing he does in here. I think if we didn't pick that one up too, go ahead.
Last week, to pick up on that discussion, we talked an awful lot about that. He said, yes, we give thanks for food, shelter, love, family, but do we live a kind of thankful life that says, even in adversity, can I give thanks to God for all my aches and pains, and when my kids are not what I want them to be, or my friends die, or whatever it is, can I still give thanks for those things in my life that don't make me happy? And that was a hard discussion, I think. Now, I do think that the things that you can change, and I'm not sure that I have the ability to do that.
I don't think maybe I have.
But some people do, and I think that's what Saint really did.
Werner and then, I had trouble with that too, but I guess I don't see that God would ask for even the choir that we give thanks for our pain. I think that our pain is also a pain to Him. When we're sick and suffering, He's sick and suffering too. But I think that we can give thanks that even though any pain, that we can recognize God where all good things come from. And this world, as we live in sin, pain is a part of the sinful world. And God doesn't create that, and I don't think we can be really thankful. And that's what bothers me when somebody, is sick and it sounds like they're so joyful that they're sick, because it's the hand of God, and I think that, it's their own stuff.
But I don't get past the just being concerned about my owl instead of keeping Christ at the center of my life. I mean, it's a very self-centered thing that happens.
The discussion between Werner and Mary is what I had the most difficulty articulating or coming to as I tried to get these words, tried to come with some understanding of Thanksgiving, and Paul's letter helped. And the fact that the dictionary could not define Thanksgiving helped. Now, let me try again, because now I have the occasion to say again what I've not said very well yet. Thanksgiving includes gratitude for past favors, gratefulness, and at the time of my pain, I do not feel that. You're absolutely right, Werner. I think we would be playing tricks on ourselves, and you certainly would not be doing anybody else any good to say, if you were really loved God and if you were really faithful, you ought to be, and I'm going to fix some of these words, happy, rejoicing, have joy, be glad about. Right. My point, if I understand Paul, is Thanksgiving includes gratitude at good times for past favors received. I'm going to stick with that. But it is more than that. And I do think there's a way, at the time of the pain, to give thanks, even though I'm not happy. Thanks is bigger than being happy or joyful. That's what I'm trying to get at. You're nodding, so can we?
I think that, again, Paul's example is a good one, because it's again a perspective.
Correct.
If we look upon ourselves as having some vocation and things aren't going well, and that's our total life, then things are really bad. But if our total life is in Christ, and whatever we're doing on this earth is allowing us to eat and have the things that we need, but our real purpose in life is to be in a relationship with Christ, then some of these other things are secondary, and when they go bad, like Paul in prison, the man doesn't have to concentrate on the fact that he's in prison and now until life is wrecked, he still has the opportunity to witness to Christ. So he's still doing what he, felt was the important thing in life. He may not be doing it in the ideal conditions, but he was still doing it.
Correct. Okay. The difference between the King James, all things work together for good to those who love God. That's a promise about, it seems to be, a promise about the outcome, whereas the Revised Standard Version, God works for good in all things to those who love Him, is a perspective on all things and an ability to move beyond my present dilemma to see the possibilities that God could bring out of even the worst. And the place where we have that most clearly is the crucifixion of Christ. That which was the greatest of tragedies, out of that God worked the redemption of the world. That didn't take away the agony of that moment. But thankfulness, I think, has some reference to the kind of perspective that can see in the midst of that trouble and that pain, and not denying that pain, can get us to move outside of our present circumstances and be able to see the action of God or be able to move outside of that present pain. So it isn't it isn't glad, rejoice, joy, gratitude, but I think it's a dimension of thankfulness in Paul's letter to Philippians. I hope we're not just playing with words. Ruth?
Let's take the rest of the suffering for a moment and see whether there's anything from Paul in this letter that speaks to that. I agree they are different. I do think Paul has some reference to thanksgiving in the midst of stomach aches and headaches that had nothing to do with bearing the cross for Jesus Christ. They weren't because you worked too hard in the kingdom. Let's even assume they might be because you drank too much alcohol the night before. Now what? Or I don't know. Anyway, don't have it as suffering for the gospel's sake. Just have it as a miserable day. Does Paul have any help? Yes, Ellen.
He said in everything that he was content or thankful, not for. Maybe that's not the best way I hear it.
Yeah,
all
right, that's
part
of
it.
And part of that would be, I know how to be abased, I know how to abound. 4:10, is that where you were?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Be thankful in it, not for it. Is the difference between gratitude, thankfulness for past favors, and a perspective or an attitude that you bring to the present situation. That's the major distinction we're making. Werner?
I think that in those times when we're miserable, that we can give thanks that we're still children.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, when we're miserable, we so often feel that we've been abandoned, and, you know, we're just bearing this whole thing alone. And I think at that time we can give thanks in all things that we are children of God and loved at least by one. But we don't have to give thanks for the headache or the stomach ache or the miserable day.
Let me turn to Psalm 77, if you will. Unless you have a New Testament and do not have the Psalms, I think we all have. Turn to Psalm 77. I guess I was personally very disappointed that that's not in the hymnal. I don't know why they didn't choose it. If there's something in the text or the history or the theology that's not good, I sure don't know what it is, because it's one of the ones that has been very helpful to me personally. I think it has reference to the present conversation and Mary's question. Psalm 77. Let me just read it aloud, because we have several different translations. I cry aloud to God that he might hear me. In the day of my trouble I seek the Lord. In the night my hand is stretched out without wearying. My soul refuses to be comforted. I think of God and I moan. I meditate and my spirit faints. Thou dost hold my eyelids from closing. I'm so troubled that I cannot speak. I consider the days of old. I remember the years long ago. I commune with my heart in the night. I meditate and search my spirit. Will the Lord spurn forever and never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love forever ceased? Are his promises at an end for all time? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his compassion? That's the context. And the attempt to meditate and the attempt to search and everything else, and I don't feel any relief at all. I said, it is my grief that the right hand of the Most High has changed, even how to live in the silence of God, or even at the time when I don't even know I'm God's child anymore. I mean, that really is, I think, someone in trouble. I will call to mind the deeds of the Lord. I will remember the wonders of old. The whole psalm shifts when there is the ability, as Jim Gamrath asked, isn't it okay to remember? When there is the possibility of turning out from that, even from meditation my own relationship to God, and simply remembering. God's people are people who can remember the mighty acts of God. That if we had that as part of our thanksgiving, it seems to me that that's been part of the history of what it means to be faithful people. That's a very powerful psalm, to me anyway. I don't mean you can learn that as a technique. I mean, what we're talking about is that solid thanksgiving as a way of life is not dependent upon outward circumstances. It's not dependent upon things being favorable, for which it's fairly easy to be grateful. If you want to bring the worst indictment of us, is we don't even do that first step of what should be easy, and that's to be grateful for our blessings. That's a first step. I don't know how else to say more than that, but that's one of the things this day is, and I don't want to move beyond that, assuming that one we all do well. We don't even do that well. But it seems to me that the psalm lets us go beyond that which should be easy, that's giving gratitude for present blessing, into the possibility of thankfulness as a perspective that does bring. I guess we're talking about up here praise. Maybe that's always the opposite of self-centered. Maybe that would be one of the words that would help up here. That the whole letter is bracketed by grace and peace. Grace as the beginning of all of God's blessings, and peace as the benediction or conclusion to all of God's blessings. Maybe you don't understand the letter or thanksgiving unless you always bracket it with grace and peace. But anyway, I think that dimension is strong in the letter. Does that, somebody else want to get into it? I didn't.
I'd like to pick up on Jim's comment a bit ago. I wanted to say something about that. There was a period in my life that I found myself continually praying only for other people and, outward sort of concern about others' problems and their needs, thankfulness to them and that sort of thing. And finally came up short one day thinking, well, Lord, you old sinner, you need to pray for yourself a little bit too. And I thought, why haven't I been doing that? Why is I'm always thinking of the needs of others? Why I have needs that I should recognize in myself, and it kind of changed my mood of prayer to always include, the needs in my spiritual life, and I have been neglecting that. Mm-hmm. And I wanted other people to have that same experience.
I think that comes out very strongly, and that's being a bit judgmental. I think if one gets caught up in social justice to the exclusion of one's own personal life, that can happen. One can feel justified by caring about others in these vast terms. I know I'm in danger of doing that sometimes. I think, well, because I care about all the other things, I forget that the person next to me is lonely. And that is all part of the experience. And you can feel a little bit justified because you perhaps take the day and you need to break the world and are socially aware.
Just because one section of this has been misused theologically and psychologically, namely the power of positive thinking, or EST, which says as long if you can simply refuse to be a victim, there are no problems in the world. That was said here at Koinonia one night. And two immediate responses were, like world hunger, sure, if somebody who's starving would just stop being a victim, there is no problem. I mean, if people just said, what in the world? And then we realized he was a EST trainer and that he was just running these tapes. It was scary. But anyway, I know that it has been misused, but there still is lots of truth in whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is a good report, think on these things. There is some real, genuine theological truth to some selectivity process in what you remember. And simply having, I remember the man in Washington, D.C., who said that he realized that his night's sleep was bracketed by the 11 o'clock news, the 7 o'clock news, and that all of his sleep was surrounded by the worst of what human beings do to one another, and he simply stopped that. He didn't have the last thing at night and the first thing in the morning, the world's problems and war and rape and the Washington Post and WTOP news. He, before he went to sleep, had something that was much more like last night's story or something, not in order to naively think that that made the world right, but that there is some truth to that. And I think that's a piece of what we're talking about up here. I know I never can fight the coffee bell. There's one thing that I would like to push a little bit in 4:4. Rejoice in the Lord always, say rejoice. Let all men know your forbearance. The Lord is at hand. Have no anxiety about anything, but in everything,
by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God.
You have done without it. You were not a seminary-trained homiletician, so you didn't do what I just have to do. I'm caught. I'm always writing sermons that have three parts, no matter what I start with. Now, you're freed from that, and give thanks to God for that. You've been doing the same thing, and we're only missing the third part. Did you realize that? I mean, the sermon just pops out. All right. You can even illustrate it. There's one arrow back, there's one arrow down, and there's one arrow this way, and we've done that. Thanksgiving is to remember and to think back and to have gratitude for past favors. Thanksgiving is an attitude at the present moment that shapes how I see and how I experience. Thanksgiving is also a vision and a perspective of hope as I face the future, and that's in here too. And that really is, I don't think that's reading into Philippians. It really does pop out. It's a vision that's going to transform what's coming. If I really have thanksgiving, it isn't only stopping in grateful past, it transforms. When I say my prayers, requests, petitions, it's with thanksgiving. It's already assuming that transforming possibility in my life of living with thankfulness as my lifestyle. I think Paul has that in here. We've probably found in our life some experience of this. Maybe Jim is right that Mary said that's difficult, and I think he said I'm not even sure it's possible. What we're talking about here, I think, is a gift. I do think, however, it's a promised gift, a gift of the Spirit, a gift of those who come to faith. In other words, our Lutheran theology would say that which is not possible is possible with God. It isn't that we take a 10-week course at the local church and come to this, but I do think we're talking about something that we've seen in the lives of the saints and that we could pray for as a gift. One of the times that I experienced something similar to what we've said is at the time of a funeral, and the sensitive pastor who preached and ministered to that family, in essence, said you could ask one of two things this morning. The natural thing is to ask why. That will continue to take you into yourself, into your dilemma, into the present pain. We're not going to be free from that, and it's okay as long as we know that that question really continues to send us into the present sorrow. There is another question, and that is, to what purpose? And unless we can ask that this morning also, we don't ever really get to God works for good in all things. We don't really get to the possibility of seeing that the present imprisonment is expanding the gospel. We really don't get to the kind of maturity of thanksgiving of this letter unless we can also ask, to what purpose? That really does say we move out of ourselves and out of that self-centered approach to this experience and have that kind of vision which can transform. I would assume you, like me, at the end of that hour in this letter, simply in a kind of humble way, pray maybe someday, or, you know, beyond my present experience. If that isn't your response, I guess I'd be a little surprised if you think you're already there. The one word of comfort is, Paul also in this letter says, not that I've already made that. Paul, I'm not sure I'd want Paul to be my pastor. I mean, I think he would kind of put me down. But when you find a place that you really think Paul is human after all, and if you take him at his word, he's saying, I'm talking a better game than I play. So if that's true, then maybe we can listen to him and learn something. Have a good day.